Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From 16 West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along, as always. There is still no significant movement on the budget or that Medicaid debate here at the North Carolina General Assembly, at least no significant movement that we are aware of. For our conversation today, we turn to somebody who might have insight on whether or not there will be any significant movement in the near future. He is a leader of the North Carolina Senate, a 10-term member of the General Assembly from Rockingham County, Phil Berger. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Jeff.
An update of sorts. Any significant conversations that have taken place in recent days?
Not since Friday. Since then, we have introduced legislation in the Senate to deal with a part of the continuation of state spending. That being the federal grant drawdowns. We've introduced that, but that's been the only real change over the past week.
When do you anticipate having your next formal direct communication with the governor?
Have nothing scheduled at this time. We have he has my cell number, I have his cell number, and in the past, it's been a situation where he would call me, or I would call him, or I would text him. And he would return the call, but nothing is scheduled at this time. Do not anticipate any conversations today.
Is it hyperbolic to think that we might not have a budget until next spring, after the primary, for a year and a half, till after the election in 2020?
So what I would say is, actually, we have a budget. And
a new budget. It's an important clarification.
Right. But there is, unlike the federal government, where you have the specter of a shutdown and offices being closed and people not being able to go to work, that sort of thing. In North Carolina several years ago, we modified state statutes to provide that if we get into a new fiscal year and have not adopted a new budget, that state spending, functions will continue at last year's level. And we looked at that since we don't have a new budget this year, and that level at this point is $23.8 billion, I believe, and of that, $700 million is debt service. So as far as spending for the things that people expect of state government, funding schools, funding the Department of Transportation, those sorts of things, the funding level will continue at last year's level, last year's recurring level.
Is it a possibility, a plausibility, that there is no newly enacted budget come next March or come next November? Where are you on that right now?
Right. I would say that's possible. I would not say that's something that, at least thus far, anyone that I've talked to would like to see as the result. I think everyone would like to see a new budget adopted, but it is entirely possible that, what we call the statutory recurring budget would be the budget for that period of time.
Right now, we're 17 days into this fiscal year. As you mentioned, there's not a government shutdown. Who, if anyone, in your perspective, from your perspective, is being adversely affected? Or let me be a little bit more direct. Who's being most adversely affected by the lack of a compromise, the lack of a newly enacted budget at this point?
I don't think anyone at this time. I do think that there are some things that we would like to see move in a particular direction, and I think there's consensus on many of these things that will not take place if we don't have a budget or if we don't do something. Probably the biggest of those is the Medicaid transformation, which is the funding to enable the state to go from our current fee-for-service traditional Medicaid program to the capitated model of Medicaid. There are some dollars that need to be appropriated in order to ensure that transition takes place.
Sure.
And the transition is already starting because the sign-up period, some of those requirements are already being implemented.
And let's just delineate, because I do think it's important. A lot of people listening to this program probably know exactly what you're talking about, and other people go, wait a second, did Phil Berger just mention Medicaid transformation? What was that? There are about 2 million people in the state who are already covered by Medicaid.
Currently covered by what we would refer to as traditional Medicaid.
Right. When you talk about transformation, this is a change to the already existing structure, folks who are covered by it, and some new folks that would be covered by that program. That is separate, largely, from the Medicaid expansion piece that is also kind of hanging up a lot of what we're talking about.
That's correct.
Okay. Anything you'd want to add for that to that for context?
No, I think that's that's accurate. Okay. The transformation, I would say that has very little, if anything, to do with Medicaid expansion. And I think there's consensus amongst Republicans and Democrats, with Governor Cooper, with me, with the Speaker, there's consensus that the Medicaid transformation is something that's good for the state of North Carolina and something that we need to make sure takes place.
Okay. We'll set Medicaid transformation over here, and we'll talk about the I think I called it last week with someone, the 600,000-person elephant, Medicaid expansion. We've heard from the left they want clean Medicaid expansion. It has long been the position of your body, the Senate, and also Republican majorities in both chambers, that there's not going to be any movement on Medicaid expansion. Since 2010, since the Affordable Care Act passed, we've had 37 states and D.C. expand. Has there been any movement from your philosophical position on this in recent months? Are there any cracks in the argument? Is there anything that anybody has said to you that has moved you at all on expanding Medicaid?
What I would say is that from the time that Medicaid expansion was first brought forward as a possibility, I have looked at the nuts and bolts, so to speak, of Medicaid expansion. What does it mean? Who does it affect? What does it cost? Is it a good thing for us to do? I continue to do that. I continue to look at the experiences in other states. I continue to listen to the arguments of people who favor Medicaid expansion. And my opinion on whether or not Medicaid expansion is the right thing for North Carolina has not changed. But that doesn't mean that I haven't explored options. Doesn't mean that I haven't looked at, if you do it this way, what happens. But overall, the idea of expanding Medicaid in North Carolina continues to be a bad policy move in my view.
Share with me, if you would, if you've had any aha moments or moments of optimism. Because when we think about states that have expanded, I mean, they include Arkansas and Montana and a number of what we think about as red states. And I'm not going to get into the red versus purple hue of North Carolina. But in considering the expansions that have taken place in other states, have there been moments or have there been angles of those expansions where you've thought, oh, that was well done?
There have been, the way I would characterize it is that there have been Medicaid expansions in some states that have been less harmful to the overall budgetary stability of those states. And I would point to Utah as one mm-hmm. example. I think, and of course, they're still waiting to get approval from the federal government on the waiver that that they have submitted for the way they are expanding. I think the expansion in, you mentioned Arkansas, is something that I've looked at, and it's better than. I'm not sure what the term would be, pure Medicaid expansion.
Right. I said clean before. If you don't like that word, I'm not tied to it.
Have some difficulty associating the word clean with Medicaid expansion.
Understood.
But there are some, as I said, that are less bad, I guess, is one way to put it.
I do believe that Arkansas is among three or four states that have had some savings because of Medicaid. You also mentioned Utah, and I didn't have this in my notes, but I want to ask you about the possibility of putting the question of Medicaid expansion before the people of North Carolina. I believe, and this is off the top of my head, so please jump in if I'm mistaken. Utah and Idaho, I think, last year, both did ballot referendums, and they were both approved by the people in, again, red states. Is that something you would be open to?
You know, both of those states are what, when I was in classes in college, I believe were referred to as initiative and referendum states, where circulate a petition and it's required that it go on the ballot. I would not be in favor of that. I think North Carolina is not an initiative and referendum state. I don't think it's something that we should start, dipping our toes in that water, because where do you stop? What issue then becomes an issue that you don't submit to the people? Our system is that people elect their representatives, and they trust and expect those representatives to make decisions. If they make the wrong decisions or decisions that are not supported by the population, then you change the personnel. So I would not be in favor of that.
Phil Berger, Republican of Rockingham County here on the WNC Politics Podcast, in his 10th term here at the North Carolina Legislature, 5 in the minority, 5 in the majority as the leader of the upper chamber, as the Senate pro tem. We're talking about the budget impasse. Can we call it we keep calling it an impasse. What do you refer to it as when you're kicking things around with your staff and advisors?
I refer to it as the failure of Governor Cooper to sign a good budget.
All right. I wanted to ask you about, potential middle ground, if there is middle ground, when it comes to people who are living in North Carolina in the coverage gap. So one of the things we've heard from the left, advocates of Medicaid expansion supporters, is that about 15% of people who are in this gap have some sort of mental health challenge. And I'm wondering if, as we think about people with substance abuse disorder and other mental disabilities, if that is something that would be a starting point for you, because we hear the rhetoric able-bodied, we hear about people that you do not think should be covered under Medicaid expansion. But as for people who have mental disabilities, mental challenges, is that a starting point for you?
So here's the way I would like to approach responding to that question. When you're talking about Medicaid expansion, you're talking about somewhere between 500 and 600,000 people, mm-hmm. is the number that we constantly hear. What I think it's important for us to do is understand who makes up that population. And so two-thirds of that population, if we're 60% mm-hmm. of the population, are people that are currently eligible for health policies, private health policies, subsidized on the exchange.
So on the Affordable Care Act exchange.
On the exchange.
Understand you.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
And so of the total population of, let's say it's 600,000, then you're talking about as many as 400,000 of those currently are eligible for coverage. And when people are talking about expanded Medicaid, what I hear is that they need to have insurance coverage. Well, the reality is 60% are already there. So then the remaining 40%, who are those folks? And I think one of the problems with Medicaid expansion is that we're not looking at what you're talking about in terms of targeting expenditure of public dollars. It's a scattershot approach where you're gonna take in a large population of folks that already have access to coverage. So I'm open to talking about the folks that are in that coverage gap. And some of them may be people as you've described, and I'm interested in looking at proposals that would function as a way for state government, with or without assistance from the federal government, to try to address those issues. So far, what I've heard from Governor Cooper is an all-or-nothing Medicaid expansion approach. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's inappropriate for him to take the position that the entire budget should be held up on this issue, because I think it is more complicated in terms of targeting governmental relief to a population in a way that does not overextend the state, and in a way that does not create, I think, the kinds of things that all too often we see in government, and that is a promise that something is going to fix something, and then go back and look at it, and nothing has really changed. There are numerous outcomes. Numerous studies that show that outcomes in health outcomes in states that have expanded Medicaid are not necessarily any better than health outcomes overall in states that have not expanded. And so I think part of the problem there is you're taking people that are already covered by some policy, and you're moving them from private insurance to the Medicaid roles. I just think that creates the kinds of incentives that are disruptive and are harmful to people.
Shifting Titanic deck chairs from?
In some respects, yes.
You've been through a lot of different elections, obviously your own, but also helping to elect Republicans in various Senate districts across the state. I want to ask you about a House district. God forbid we should talk about the House just for a moment.
I try to avoid talking about the House.
I know, but here we are. Representative Greg Murphy from Pitt County has won, by my count, he's really won two Republican primaries in this special congressional election to replace the late Walter Jones. He was the top finisher of 17 GOP candidates back in April. Then he won this runoff just, I believe, a couple of weeks ago against Joan Perry. The runoff by virtue of him not receiving 30+1% of the vote. Representative Murphy has been an advocate for Medicaid expansion. This in a deeply Republican constituency. So I'm wondering what you take away, if anything, about the fact that he won once or twice, but he's now the nominee in this special congressional election. Having been a pretty vocal supporter of Medicaid expansion in recent years.
First thing I would say is I don't think he calls it Medicaid expansion.
He doesn't. He calls it Carolina Cares.
And he says it's different from expansion. He says it's not expansion.
But in conversations you and I have had, we acknowledge that it really is Medicaid expansion. Or is that not a fair classification?
No, it looks like expansion to me.
And me too, yeah. So, sure, I guess messaging aside, it is Medicaid expansion. We're calling it Carolina Cares. So for a state House representative who has supported in principle, if not in name, the expanding of Medicaid in a deeply red constituency, and he won the initial primary, won the second one, what does that tell you about where Republican voters are with this issue, if it tells you anything?
I think one of the things it tells me is generally in elections, the person that's better funded has the opportunity to not only get their message out, but to define themselves in ways that they want to be defined. I think that's an important aspect. I will tell you that when I talk to Republican voters in my district and Republican voters around the state, and I talk about Medicaid expansion, they're not in favor of it. Now, if I call it something else, I may convince them that it's something to do.
Representative Murphy from Pitt County, that of course is where Greenville is tonight. Our president, Donald J. Trump, will be in Greenville for his latest political rally. Just chatting prior to the microphones going on, you had mentioned that you've never met the president, which I was surprised by. Have you had an opportunity to meet the president?
Yes and no. Okay. There have been a couple of opportunities where the president was going to be in North Carolina. I've gotten a call. He's going to be here. Would you like to be at the airport? That sort of thing. And it's just not worked yet. I fully support the president. I think he's done a great job. I think he's done a magnificent job for North Carolina. I support him wholeheartedly, and it is a regret that I have that I've not had the opportunity to shake his hand.
Couple of questions on the president. Let's just address these comments that he made this past weekend. I guess they weren't comments, they were tweets, in reference to these four Democratic congresswomen. And this is not the whole tweet thread. Quote, they can go back and help fix the totally broken, crime-infested places from which they came. Close quote. There's been a lot of conjecture, a lot of news reporting on this, as you're aware. Do you read that as racist?
No.
Why not?
Because it doesn't strike me as racist. It strikes me as a statement by the president as to, I think, his frustration that you have members of Congress who do not appear to be, in his view, fully supportive of the country that they live in and represent. I think it, again, my opinion, somebody else is going to have to get into the president's head But
I don't know if anybody can do that.
Well, I think he at times when those tweets come out, in some respects he's expressing a frustration that I think is shared by a lot of people. I think it's one of the reasons that he won the presidency to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Did those tweets, or did I guess that specific quote which I just read, strike you? Was it cringeworthy for you?
No. It was not.
What has been the most challenging part? Because you've now been a public official, I'm doing this off the top of my head, through two presidents, Bush and Obama, right?
Correct.
What has been the most challenging part of navigating the Trump presidency? Because it's love him or hate him. It's a very different dynamic than Bush and Obama. What's been the most challenging part of it for you?
For me personally, I have not seen that as being a particular challenge. Quite frankly, what I have seen is someone that at the national level is implementing policies that are consistent with where I would be philosophically. I think there's a lot of effort to try to conflate some of the things or the way the president says some things have that be reflective of a negative as far as policies. For me, I look at the policies that he supported, the outcomes that I see as a result of those policies, and I see a lot of positives.
As we think about the next year plus and the 2020 election, what is the biggest hurdle for him to reaching re-election?
I don't see it as a hurdle, but I think the one thing that could present a problem for him, in my view, would be if the economy were to turn in a different direction. I do believe that the economic success that we have seen in North Carolina and across the country is something that argues for the re-election of the people who were the architects of the policies at the federal level and at the state level, quite frankly, that have enabled that economic positive outcome. I think if the economy were to change, that could be a negative for him. Beyond that, there's always the potential for something on the international scale or a stage to have an impact. Those are the things that in some respects may be out of his immediate control.
Phil Berger, leader of the North Carolina Senate, Republican from Rockingham County, here on the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Senator Berger. That's B-E-R-G-E-R. Going to go a lightning round here. Just move through a few with a little more speed. You were in Germany last week.
Yes.
What did you learn? What was a takeaway or two?
Actually, the interesting thing about that is there was a lot of discussion about trade, which is a huge topic here in North Carolina, but on the international stage as well. About the European Union and the relationship among the members in the European Union. I had an opportunity to sit down with some university students and engage in conversation with them about the concerns that they have for the future and some of the interest that they have. An individual who was providing a briefing to us on issues that really are fairly similar to some of the issues we're dealing with here. Immigration in Europe. Immigration is a particular issue, although the immigration is generally from African and Middle Eastern countries as opposed to immigration from Central and South American countries. But some of the same issues popping up. I felt like I learned a good bit. The immediate downside was that I would not recommend a trip of that distance in 4 days, back and forth.
Noted. One country that you have never been to that you would like to go to?
Vietnam.
Why?
because I grew up during the time of the Vietnam War, graduated high school in 1970, and many of my friends were drafted into the service. And a lot of stories, a lot of talk about that. I've heard a number of good things about what is happening in that country from an economic and social standpoint. I'd like to see it.
I'm almost embarrassed to share this. Just last month, my parents were down for a week, and I only learned then that my dad, who just turned 71, his draft number was 13. He did not serve in the military, did not go to war. He had educational deferments. What was your draft number?
I think it was like 273.
Okay. It's a lot safer than 13.
Right. And, of course, I had also gotten married about the time that they instituted the lottery that was instituted.
On a much lighter note, former Senator Tom Apodaca, close political ally, personal friend of yours, has referred to you, I believe affectionately, as the Grand Poobah.
I've not heard him say that.
Well, you said it to me. I hope I didn't just get you in trouble, Senator Apodaca. What do you refer to him as?
Tom.
No nickname?
I do not have a nickname for him, no. I'm, you know, there are some folks that have nicknames.
Sure.
And there are some folks who have ringtones for various people when they call them. I don't have any of that. I call people either by their first name or their last name or by their title.
Are you going to sick Apodaca on me for asking you that question?
Not at all. I'm glad you told me.
Uh-oh. Favorite baseball player growing up?
Mickey Mantle.
Were the Yankees your favorite team?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Still.
Okay.
Having a good year.
Phil Berger is a 10-term Republican from Rockingham County. After serving half of that time in the minority, he has been the Senate pro tem leader of the North Carolina Senate and a powerful player here, of course, at the North Carolina General Assembly since 2000. Senator Berger, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, as always, for listening. You can find the program, subscribe, leave a review or a note at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Don't forget to stay up to date with whatever is happening with those budget negotiations at our website, WUNC.org. For Senator Berger, I'm Jeff DeBerry. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.